The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I am here with Jessica Oppenlander, the sister behind Liebling Wines and also part of Hubel Grapes Estate. Jessica, thanks so much for being part of the podcast today.
Thanks for coming today.
Yeah, so let's start here. And I want to talk about your background and about the wines and the reason the Sauvignon Blanc and the Gamay and the Cab Franc. But I want to start with your crazy father. And I mean crazy in the nicest way. I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about your pappy, who I believe came here in around 1984 to make wine.
So he came in 1984 to grow grapes. So he had just finished his agriculture and viticulture degree. And like the small towns of Germany they are, he gets a call from a gentleman, Mr. Hubel, which the namesake comes from, that says he bought some land in Niagara and he needed someone to come plant grapes there and take care of it. And if my dad would be interested. So he, with support from his parents, especially my Oma, his mom, he decided to come down and didn't think he would stay because he thought Canada, he thought growing grapes, making wine there, it wasn't anything that he really thought about. And he came and he fell in love and decided to stay. And with the partners, the Hubels, they grew the business to what it is today.
At the time, like, that is such a risk because, I mean, there still is perceptions now more internationally than here about just the potential and what we make here in Ontario. But in Germany in the 80s, at most, maybe it would be like ice wine or fruit wine or, you know, I can't think it could have been much more knowledge than that.
So Mr. Hubel, my dad has talked about the background behind why they had farmland before that they had lost in the war. So when they like were able to kind of reestablish their family, they were looking for places to invest in agriculture. And he just had his eyes and his heart set on Canada. And he visited a few times. He met some people here that were from Germany and he fell in love with it. And so he made a connection here and just needed some people to believe in that. And one of them was my dad. And my dad was a little keener in school and had a good reputation in Germany and came from a farming family as well.
Right. Okay.
So they had they had vineyards and chickens and cash crops, and my Oma and Opa ran the local post office. So they were busy in Germany and they were known for what they did. So to come here, it was big, but it's exciting.
And I guess, as you said, there's someone here with local knowledge that your father trusted. So mm-hmm. that certainly takes away some of the, you're not doing it blindly. Mm-hmm. But your dad was he around 22 years
22
old?
22 years old.
I think about what I was doing at the age of 22 and no, I didn't have anywhere near that level of responsibility. That's crazy.
No, it's even, I think like I turned 30 this year and I think of what my dad did at 22 and I think about it at 30 years old and I'm like, I couldn't imagine, because he also eventually had young kids as well. Like,
oh,
it's,
my God.
Yeah, it's, he was a power source there.
Yeah. What were the early days like for you, like growing up here, growing up in the vineyards and, you know, and just a very different lifestyle than certainly most of the 22-year-olds I grew up with?
I don't think I realized how different what I grew up in was from other people until I went away to university. I had an elementary school teacher that told me I lived in the Virgil bubble, the Niagara on the Lake bubble. He didn't really kind of realize the privilege that I had growing up in agriculture and growing up here until I moved away. But I had a fantastic childhood, memories of always being outside, running through the vineyards, going on the four-wheelers. I loved harvest time, especially Thanksgiving, because we were always harvesting at Thanksgiving, and I'd be off school, and I would go with my dad to the wineries, actually. Peller has always been a big partner with us, and they've bought a lot of our grapes, and even now, as I'm older, the people that have worked there that have seen me at Crush when I was a little kid, they're amazed that, like, my brother and I are there now. So I remember going to the Crush pad, inviting them over for Thanksgiving dinner, then having to tell my mom, Mom, we invited everyone over. And they didn't actually end up coming. I remember my dad said I'd be scared sometimes. It was a fantastic childhood. I loved it so much. And I think that's really what instilled such a passion for me early on.
And is this always what you wanted to do? I saw this quote from your website. Vineyard work was not my first choice while growing up, and I'd often help out the farm in other ways, you know, mowing lawns, tech support, which I'm sure was greatly appreciated. But what turned for you? What made you want to come back here and study?
Yeah, so my brothers were all on the farm, and I was never the best driver, so I got to mow the back part of my parents' lawn and do things that weren't maybe front seeing. But I would help out in the office, started as we got bigger, but also as things in farming changed and a lot of technology got introduced, I would help out there. But I never realized how much science was involved in grape growing, in winemaking, and just the other careers that were possible. And I went away to university. I actually went to UOIT, which I think is Ontario Tech University now, and I was just doing environmental science, biological science, and I did a third year plant course, and I realized, wow, plants are way cooler than like human biology. I'm like, this is really interesting. And I told my dad that, and my dad had recently, in the past few years from that, got involved in a lot of boards in like the local industry. So the Canadian Grapevine Certification Network, he worked a lot with Brock, and he introduced me to a professor there who's also a grape grower, Debbie Ingalls. And I did a tour at Brock and I absolutely fell in love with it. I'm like, wow, viticulture is really cool. There's so much science involved in it, so much technology. Like, I want to switch gears. And I did. And I did my degree at Brock, switched to that.
We'll get into Liebling wine. I don't know why I always do this. I always preview what's coming. Let's just talk about what's now. But this is one of the first times I've interviewed someone that also just helps to manage vineyards and farms. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you tell people just what Hubel Grapes Estates is really all about, and the role that you guys play in some of the more well-known Ontario Niagara wineries.
First off, before leaving, yeah, we were grape growers. And that started with my dad. People really liked what he was doing, and he would meet up with like local farmers, and they actually would ask him for help. And just because of what we did and the size we are, we have a lot of the equipment. So equipment can be a big expense, and just the labor side of stuff and the expertise. My dad came with that. So he started managing people's vineyards for them, which there's a lot of farmers that do that in the area. So he started to manage their vineyards, and they really liked what my dad was doing. And he took on more, and his brother actually eventually joined him. So his younger brother, my Uncle Thomas, is on the farm as well. Bright like my dad, just they have the feel for the vines. He's incredibly intelligent as well. So the two of them had taken over a lot of things. And with my brothers coming in, and doing other things and making connections, we took on Ravine as well. Mm-hmm. And they taught us a lot. We ran their vineyards organic. They're organically farmed, and we learned a lot about what they were doing. We were able to bring that into our own practices. So for our farm, our biggest thing is we want to grow quality grapes, top quality grapes, to make top quality wine. That's always been a big portion for us, and just to give back to the environment, especially for the next generation. My dad did this for us, and we want to do it for our kids too.
It's almost like I've been in a relay race with the baton.
Yeah. Yeah. So keep passing on. And people just really liked what we were doing, and liked the quality focus that my dad had, and that he kind of put on that, and the integrity too, right? It's not an easy business to be in. Grape growing is difficult. You have tough years, but it's kind of how you go on from that and persevere from that. And he had learned a lot of things, and it's also like a grower relationship too, right? You learn from the people around you, so he was able to build a community as well.
And you guys celebrated, or your father celebrated his 40th anniversary doing this recently.
Yeah, was on the 23rd. We celebrated with, it was really cool. We had a lot of family, friends, and growers that we've known for a very long time that remember when my dad first came. And they've been working with us for over 20 years. So it's funny when they see, or cool when they see my brother and I, and we have kids, or I'm expecting, and they're like, oh, I remember when I first met your dad 20 plus years ago. So it's really cool.
The relationship between what you guys do and wineries is so important. And it doesn't get discussed a lot. Usually, and for people that are into wine or just enthusiastic about it, they know the front facing. They know the winemaker and maybe this person working in the cellar and blending, and they're using this oak and all that. But the relationships that, you know, someone like a Thomas Batchelder, who has relationships at Wismer and all these different vineyards. It's so important to have that positive relationship in terms of making quality wines. The relationship and trust that you guys will have with the individual winemakers and vineyards, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's big because good wine starts in the vineyard. You have to start with good grapes. And that starts now. Like, even everything that we've done, actually even before now, from planting the right variety in the right site, in the right soil, with the right combination, it's the right clone, it's the right rootstock. You're starting from the very beginning, making good decisions that will later play out into a good wine. And even now, as we're getting into, as we've, pruning's done, tying's done, but now as we've gotten into like bud burst has happened in most varieties. We have leaves there. We're taking away extra frost branches. We're dialing down how many buds are being left there. We're doing that and working with our winery partners at the same time to make sure that at the end of the day, we're reaching the targets that they want to reach, that we're all in, like, have the same goals. So that, and we've been very fortunate. We have great, like, working relationships with our winery partners.
Sorry to interrupt. And by the way, I should mention today's May 9th. This will be released several weeks later. I'm just giving the date so people realize where you're talking about what's going on in the vineyards now. Is there ever issues with, you guys have one vision. You're in the lands. You know what works best to make the highest quality grape. But maybe the winemaker, they see things a little bit differently about we want to pick now or we want to prune differently. Can it be difficult sometimes to everyone have the same vision?
Oh, of course. No one always agrees to everything.
Yeah.
That's the nature of working with people. You're never going to be on the same page. And I think what's been cool for us on the wine side, having Liebling, is really seeing it from start to finish, from a grower to, because usually we'll be like, okay, your grapes went into this bottle. And now we're really seeing that in the past 3 years working with who we've worked with, how what we've done in the vineyard has changed the quality level of the wine or made it different. Not necessarily that it was different quality in a bad way, but like how fruit characteristics came forward by certain things that we did in the vineyard. So there's disagreements, but I think we work well together to come to a common solution. Mm-hmm. I think as growers, you know, there's a lot, and especially recently, costs have gone insane, which we're not the only industry that's happened to. So sometimes what it is something being done in the vineyard that maybe we're like, that to us doesn't make sense cost-wise, but for you makes sense quality-wise. So it's right. Just meeting in the middle there, and they've been great with that. So it's coming to a common goal with the wineries.
What are the main things that you look for in terms of if we are going to consistently be making good quality grapes, and I'm sure there's 100 different things, but what's sort of the bedrock, the foundation of what you guys do, your philosophy to ensure good quality grape no matter what the varietal is?
I think that's a difficult thing to summarize, but the best way I would say is balance. Vine balance would be the best thing to summarize that, because if a vine is in balance, it's going to give you incredible fruit. So everything that we're doing when we talk about sustainability, quality, different things we're doing in the vineyard, we're just trying to balance that vine in a way that it's giving us great fruit, because I could thin stuff down as thin as you want it, but if that vine is out of balance, and I'm going to have detrimental effects going forwards, because, you know, we have some really fertile soils here. There's a whole bunch of things that could happen that if I do certain things that may seem like it would be better quality, but then it could throw that vine out of whack. So I think vine balance is the biggest thing to get that.
By the way, it must be funny, just such a weird world where, you know, your dad, not just in making grapes for wine, but also a farming background, where the goals are so different for farmers. Like, all right, look how everything is very ripe here and it's easy to grow. And you're like, no, it's wine grapes. It needs to be difficult. You know, it's almost like two different things when you're planting for corn versus planting for Cabernet. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny you say that, because one thing that's been really cool is getting to know farmers in other commodities, and you always think like the grass, like, or that something's different, like, oh, it'd be so cool to do, yeah, like corn, or sometimes even my brother and I are like, oh, it'd be nice to have cows, or like you think that, like, that is,
that would be way easier,
then they're like, well, no, we want to grow grapes. So it's kind of funny, because they have their challenges as well, but it does seem like some other commodities maybe would be easier, but it's not always that way.
How special is it to work next to your dad?
Oh, it's very special. It's really cool. I'm so fortunate, the relationship that we have and how close that we are, and learning from him every day. I look up to him, and I look up to his, like, stamina, his integrity, and his, like, work ethic, like, above all, the way he treats people and how he acts. Like, I'm just amazed by him, and I think it's really cool.
Going back to grape quality, and, you know, there'll be more family questions as we go on with this. Well, you were taking me for a little tour and just about looking at some of the vines, and we were talking about just the tragedy that's happened in Okanagan in the past winter. And I'm curious for you as a grape grower, how differently you view that, the news, than someone listening to this pod. I'm curious what your reactions were to just what happened in this past winter over there.
oh, our hearts broke for them. It was, even when we hear about it happening, because it's happened in Germany recently too, and when you hear it happen anywhere around the world, especially when it's in your own country, your heart breaks for them, because you know it's not just a now thing, because there's later effects. Like, it's going to affect them for the next few years. It's not just something they're dealing with this year. They're going to deal with it for the next few years, and they've dealt with it for the last few years, because it hasn't just been a 1 year thing. It's the last three, four years for them have been detrimental. So it breaks your heart. You feel for them 1,000%.
What are the most dangerous things for here, for the grapes in Niagara? And I guess it'd be different if you're Niagara on the lake versus on the bench. But what are some of the main villains, enemies for you guys with Hugel?
Well, I think it's Mother Nature. It's unpredictable. So frost is a huge one, especially now. The saying in your garden, don't plant before the May 2-4 weekend because of the spring frost. Well, as you mentioned, May 9th, right now we have leaves out. Anytime there's green tissue and we get a frost again, it can be pretty dangerous. So especially right now, we're worried about frost, but we have a lot of mitigation tactics. We've learned, not myself, but growers before us, my dad's generation before, I have learned how to mitigate that. So wind machines was a huge thing, and you see them all throughout Niagara. Those have been a saving grace for us. It's the only way we can mitigate, especially the spring frost. So once we get past that, then it's just disease pressure. We live in a very humid climate. We get a lot of rain. It's weird. My brother and I had someone come in from California, and we were touring them. And when we were explaining that we do tile drainage to take water away, but then we also need irrigation to put water back. So we're always doing both of them. So it's funny that we're a commodity that does that. Humidity is a huge one that we have to deal with in sprays. After that, it would be then just getting the harvest in. So in the fall, we're also dealing with that disease pressure. We've got ladybugs. We have other fun things that we have to mitigate. And then making sure that the season and stays warm and dry for the fall, which we usually get. Our falls are usually
the spring frost. That's the one I always hear is the one that, you know, I remember, I think it was 16 in Prince Edward County. You know, a lot of vineyards were wiped out around May 2-4 weekend when there was a really, really bad one. What is the geographical distance in terms of vineyards that you guys take care of? Like how many different appellations in Niagara do you have operations in?
The brunt of our operation is, I would say, like the Four Mile Creek, St. David's Bench, Queenston. Most of it is in like Niagara on the Lake Central.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we do manage a farm on the bench.
Okay, but mostly Niagara.
Mostly Niagara.
Right.
Close to our main location.
Which is a perfect way, but you do a little bit of bench, because now I'm going to use you again as almost like a course instructor for people listening when they say, oh yeah, you know, I like to buy wine from the bench versus I like to buy wine more from Niagara on the Lake. What are the major differences stylistically in those two areas?
Yeah, I would say it just comes down to the geography of Niagara itself. So brief, maybe quick history lesson is Niagara used to be like glaciers, and as those glaciers kind of receded back, that's how we got the escarpment. When they receded back, we also got pockets of soil everywhere. We're surrounded by the lakes, so you have the escarpment, you have the lakes, you have pockets of soil, different types of soils, and different topographies. So that, I think, is the first thing that sets so many different places apart. Even in just Four Mile Creek itself, which can be quite relatively flat land, you have different soil types. And those different soil types lend itself better to different varieties, but also impart something different in the wine. Then you have the escarpment. So if anything's on the escarpment, that soil is completely different. You have the limestone that you're really looking for and some of the quality wines. And you have that topography, so you're getting different sunlight, different sun enhancements to the grapes. Then when you go more on the lakeshore side, then you have the lake effect, which you have a cooling effect from that as well. So you have so many different microclimates within one climate that's just goes from the soil to the air. So I think that's why we can have so much versatility in the different types of wines and grapes that we grow, because a Riesling that's grown on the bench is different than a Riesling that's grown on the lakeshore, just because of soil, topography, elevation. And they, like, it could be raining and hailing on one side and you have beautiful sunshine on the other.
Love it. Okay, thank you. I won't put you as the role of the teacher. We'll go something more fun. What was the last fight/bicker that you had with your father?
Oh, what would
And then I'll ask it about your brothers as well. You work in family, and I'll give you a second. I will tell everyone listening that, you know, before we even started, like, just Jessica lit up thinking about her dad and their father's history here, and working with her brothers, and just all the fun things they do about finding new technologies, finding ways to grow and to innovate and stay ahead of the curve, which is basically me talking for 30 straight seconds to give you more time, because I always ask, this, the thing, is there something you normally bicker about or fight about? And it's not that you don't have a wonderful, harmonious relationship, but every relationship has the odd speed bump.
Maybe politics.
Okay.
We can be, that would be, because like in the vineyard, I mean, he's taught me everything I know, like minus like what I've learned from my like brother, who's only 11 months older than me, but incredibly like talented when it comes to viticulture. So I would say maybe politics was, we'll joke at each other about that.
Yep.
That's probably the last bicker.
All right. And I'm judging by your age, you're the one all about conservative, and your dad's a lefty liberal.
Yes.
You know what? I even ask, what is your specific role with Hugo? And then we're going to get into Liebling. Yes. Like, is it more on the management side? Is it out in the vines? Like how would you describe your job title here? Probably I should have asked that in the minute one, not on minute 20, but here we are.
It's like any family business. We all kind of do our part in managing the farm itself. Like all, like the, I would say siblings are in upper management, and myself as well. Being 8 months pregnant, I'm not out in the vineyard as much, just because the doctor also said, stop climbing on machines during harvest.
Good advice.
Yeah. So I am still out there in the vineyard. Vineyard management side is my dad, my brother Aaron, and myself. And then we have a really incredible team of young individuals that we've brought in who are so eager and so smart. So we work with them, and just transitioning right now, it's a lot more like upper management, and just making sure that we're getting the quality that we want there, and that we can keep everybody happy.
Yep. So let's start with Liebling Wines. When did this project start?
So this started in 2022.
Oh, so this is really,
very new, but it's been a dream of our families for a very long time. How I had mentioned before that I went to Brock University. Well, during my career there, Mark Pistor was one of my professors. You know from Drink Collab, the crew there. And I actually went to school with Jeff of Divergence and Mitch, who are winemakers there. And when I had what usually would happen is we would finish harvest. My dad, my brother and I, our whole family would be sitting together. We would talk about what we loved about harvest. We're all happy because the grapes are in. You get your paycheck. You're feeling really great. And they're like, oh, you know, we should have made wine. Like that Gamay was so good.
Right.
Like when you're picking stuff, and it's the greatest. Harvest is fantastic. You pick fruit. It's in bins. You're eating it because it tastes amazing. You're so proud of like the vintage that you had.
But then you say goodbye to it. Then now it's no longer.
Yeah.
You have no ownership on it anymore.
Yeah, you wave goodbye and you're like, well, I'm sure that's going to make it. And you hear from the winemakers. They're always talking about the incredible wine that we're making.
Yeah.
Or sorry, that they're making from our grapes. So we'd stop and we would say, oh, like, we should have made wine from that. And so in 2022, my sister, Allie, who just walked by, she was just about to have her second daughter. And Mark, Jeff, and Mitch had launched Drink Collab, and I said, Dad, these are the people we're making wine with, because I've always loved Mark's wine, his Fogelaar brand, his Cab Franc, his Riesling were fantastic. And my dad agreed. We worked with him in the past. They've bought grapes from us. We're like, these are the people. And Jeff, him and I always got along really well. And we were actually partners in class and projects and stuff. And knowing the people that were behind that, we were like, these are the people that can make wine with us. And we didn't have to invest in all that infrastructure. They had a model and they had a way to work. So we started with them, and we knew the varieties we wanted to make. Myself for sure was Riesling and Cab Franc. And my dad loves Sauv Blanc. So he said, let's do Sauv Blanc. And then he threw in Gamay. He's like, we'd have Gamay. So we stuck with those four. And we cherry picked our favorite vineyards that vintage. 22 was coming off we had some frost that year. And it was coming off to the 21 vintage that was a little bit rocky. So we had some really great like aromatic whites, some really concentrated reds, which was really nice. So we cherry picked our favorite vineyards and we decided to continue with those.
And where did the title come from?
Liebling.
Where did they?
Oh, Liebling. So Liebling in German means darling or favorite. It's what my Oma would call my dad.
Aww.
So the rich history that we were just given, that my Oma encouraged my dad to come. And that's, she's depicted in our Riesling label of her and my dad walking through the vineyard. My dad was her Liebling. And it became just like a monomer that our family thought was very sweet. And we weren't actually, on my sister and I were unsure about it because we didn't know, like, German name, will people connect with it? And the more we talked to people, they really saw why, like, what Liebling meant and, like, how it really encompassed everything that our family was and the dedication that we wanted to make to our dad and to our Oma.
Is that, is your sister just coming to the room?
Yeah.
Please, come on in. Come on in. Can we speak to you for a second, or are you busy? If you're busy, it's fine.
Yeah. For sure. Hi.
Grab the mic.
Hi.
I'll edit this out. Could you introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, hi. I'm Ali Openlander. I'm sister here with Jess. Jess and I started Liebling Wines back in it's been a year now. 2 years, 2022, yeah.
I was asking Jessica before, what's the number one thing you've ever bickered with your father about when it comes to grapes, farming, or wine?
Oh, so I just kind of, I'm still new. I just joined the farm this past October. So nothing really yet. Maybe the biggest bickering was having to go work on the farm. So I, out of all the siblings, I'm pretty much probably the only one that's done most manual labor in the vineyard. So
really?
Summers growing up were spent working on the farm, and I would just, yeah, bicker with my dad, be like, I don't want to do it. I just want to hang out in the backyard. Don't make me work on the farm.
Wait a minute. How did you get stuck doing all the hard labor, and the rest of your other siblings, did they skip out on it?
No, they were the tractor drivers.
Okay.
And I was offered one day being able to drive the tractor, and I crashed it. So after that, they were like, no. Yeah, so...
How much pressure was that one day? Because you feel like, oh, if I screw up, am I going to ruin some grapes and
vines?
Yeah,
I did. I ran into the post and slowly tipped it over. Didn't fully tip it over, but yeah.
That must have been like, scary. Okay. What is the most labor-intensive job? What is the one in the vineyard that always...
Suckering.
What's that?
Suckering.
Can you explain to that to the listeners?
It's just like you're suckering the little baby shoots that are coming off of the vines.
Yeah.
So it's like you're bending down. It's a workout.
Right, right. I always thought winter pruning would be just a real son of a bitch. Like
I was in school.
Okay, smart.
Yeah.
Smart. Now, wait a minute. Now, did I hear you have two children?
Yes, I do.
And Jessica's about to have her second. How busy? Like, what is your lifestyle? What is your calendar going to be like when a second one's on the way? You already have two. Making wine takes a lot of time. You're helping to manage Hugel. That's a busy week every week.
Yeah, Jess is not allowed to. This baby is not allowed to come out. Yeah.
I think the fact that we are family, we all help each other out, that if it wasn't your siblings, you probably couldn't make it work. Because I think we all try to help each other out, especially when it comes to kids. Like, awesome in-laws and awesome partners are really great.
Right.
Because my in-law watches my son all the time, and they come over and they hang out with him. My husband's a teacher, which helps out in the summertime, so he has a lot of time with our son. But I think just because... it's family, we're able to navigate each other's schedules and help each other out quite a bit.
How close do you guys, and it's funny, the listeners need to see this, you guys are treating the mic like a hot potato. So it's like, no, you go. How close do you guys all live together? Who lives the furthest away? Allie, where do you live? How far do you live, Allie?
I live in Hamilton.
You live in, okay.
Live downtown Hamilton.
Okay, so you do have a bit of a hike here, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and were you involved the same level throughout in terms of working on the farm and just in the family biz?
No. So prior to this, I've always been in the industry, always been involved in the wine industry. I worked at, while I was in school, I worked at a nearby winery when living at home. And then I joined the Ontario craft wineries. I was mm-hmm. working with the OCW for a while, doing like the policy and government advocacy side for Ontario VQA wines, and planning the big conference was one of my projects. And then I went on maternity leave. We launched Liebling, and I was like, okay, well... like, I want to focus on this, and I want to be part of the family farm and come back to the roots. So, yeah, I joined back just this past last October.
Was it inevitable, Allie, for you and for Jessica, that at a young age, making wine, there was pretty much inevitability that is eventually where your guys' roads would lead to?
For me, no.
Yeah, no?
No, I didn't think so. Both of us, I don't think, would have thought this would have happened.
Really? Okay, so then, Jessica, I'll let you start, but Ali, you're not getting away on this one. What point did you realize? Was there a moment, was there an epiphany where you said, okay, yep, making wine, being in this is going to, that's what I want my life to be?
I think it happened over time, not like a long amount of time, but I think once I switched degrees and as I was taking school, realizing how much I loved what I was doing, I actually didn't think about probably the winemaking side till maybe COVID happened, because I was more really focused on the science side of stuff. I applied to do my PhD. Like, I was going to just go full in on the research side. And then when everything shut down and we actually didn't think we were going to get any labor on the farm, it was like all hands on deck. We're all going to be at the farm. My thesis was extended, so I had to come back and work while doing my thesis. So I came to work on the farm while doing that. And I think it just like... Maybe somewhere, Ali, you're back and you realize how much pride you have in what we do, how much you love grape growing. And then in that, like I mentioned at harvest time, when we would pick the fruit and talk about what we love that year, it was like, we need to start making some wine out of it. And then once Drink Collab came along, those kind of visions all aligned together.
What about you, Ali? Anything you would add to that? And when you're driving and you're going over the Burlington Sky Bridge and you're thinking to yourself, oh, another day driving through this. And what goes on in your mind? Like, when did you realize, yeah, this is what I want to be doing?
I love stories. I love reading. I'm not sure if you chatted about the Gamay label, but that little graphic is someone in the vineyard that is reading a book. So that's...
Well, you have a book club button on your jacket.
So I'm the book nerd. My background is in like English and marketing and communications. So I love telling the story, and I love connecting to people by telling them. And then now with Liebling, I'm able to show them this and as well as tell our story.
Well, I mean, you already told one story about your grandmother and your father, which is on the label of the Riesling. So what's going on with the other the labels, the Sauvignon Blanc and the Gamay? There's something about reading. What's that?
Yeah, so the Gamay label has a little graphic of someone in the vineyard reading. So that's kind of like, I would say that's me. It could be anyone. Like, it's could be anyone just taking time to enjoying the small little pleasures in life and the glass of wine. And then the Sauvignon Blanc label. So as Jess said, Sauvignon Blanc is our dad's favorite. So this is based off of an image of our dad planting his second vineyard in 1989, driving a John Deere tractor, planting a second vineyard. So that's a little graphic of our dad.
So there's no graphic of a tractor hitting a post.
No. And then the Cap Franc, which is coming out in the fall, will have a little graphic of a science nerd in the vineyard, and that's for Jess.
Oh, that's so
nice. Her background. Yeah, and then the vineyard. So St. David's is where we get our Riesling grapes from, and there's a slight slope in their vineyard. So this is just like to connect to the St. David's vineyard. And then the flat vineyards is from Four Mile Creek, where our other vineyards are from.
So now we'll go back to the geeky thing, and then I want to ask about what these wines taste like and just the overall philosophy of them. But what is the difference? You sort of mentioned just the slopes versus flat, but let's just stick with St. David's Bench versus Four Mile Creek. What are the stylistic differences that one would possibly typically find in wines from those two different regions?
Yeah, I would say for the Four Mile Creek, because it's flat land, you get a lot of heat units, hotter, riper, maybe more concentrated. St. David's, the bench side, soil type is different, getting a little bit more limestone, but you're also getting different shading. So what I would find really cool in, which happened a little bit in the Sauvignon Blanc as well, just because the way the rows are planted. But you get different shading and like a sun side and a shade side. So for the Riesling, you have like a cluster that is like super ripe in the front, and like on a hot summer day, you pick it and it's juicy. And the back behind it's a little bit cooler and has different characteristics. So I think it really lends well to a Riesling, gives you a lot of different characteristics to that. And then for the Four Mile Creek site, you're getting a lot of really good ripening. That's great for those reds, and then like an aromatic like Sauvignon Blanc.
Well, let's talk about the wines. What do people get? Like your guys' philosophical mantra you could say, with the wines? Like, what are you trying to do with these?
So we're trying to showcase our favorite vineyards and really focus on the vineyards itself. Obviously, there's a lot of things you can do on the wine side that can not necessarily change, but accentuate different flavors of the wine. But we really wanted to focus on showing the vineyard itself. So everything that we were doing was to do that. So for the Riesling, what we decided to do was a Pied de Cuve. So we found that this Lingard, especially now being in the second, this would be our third year making wine there, that it really, like, the vineyard itself just has this characteristic. And with the Pied de Cuve, we were able to start, like, so what that is like kind of almost like cider making. Yep. You start, like, it's, or I would say, like, a natural wine, but you hold its hand. So you start a culture. This is the science-y. Jeff and I loved it. We had three different treatments that we would do to those starter cultures to see which one we liked the best. And that was the one that we grew up and then inoculated the wine with.
Yep.
And then we just let it go to a point where we liked where the sugar was at. 2022 was a very high acid year. So we left a little bit more residual sugar in there, but I really wanted to focus on the vineyard there. So I just didn't want it to be a sweet bomb. I really wanted to showcase the freshness of it. I wanted it to be appealing and a lot of people to enjoy it and try it.
By the way, I appreciate, as we're talking, Allie's been very nice, poured the Riesling, about to pour the Sauvignon Blanc. And real quick, the message you would tell to people when they're worried about Riesling because of that boogeyman called residual sugar, even though they've probably drank a lot of California wines that had more residual sugar than is within your Rieslings. So what would you tell people when they say sweetness in Rieslings?
I think it can be deceptive when people like, and if you like sweet Riesling, if it's a wine you like, drink it. And I think a lot of people are doing Rieslings in different ways. It's not just being punched with sugar. There's a lot of people who are doing Riesling with a little bit of sugar, but Riesling itself can have quite a bit of high acidity, so that the sweetness can be really nicely balanced. And again, there's people who are doing a lot of different things with it, so don't shy away from it just because it has a little bit of sugar. People are making some incredible, well-balanced Rieslings that that lend well to a little bit of sweetness. It's all about balance, like I mentioned in the vine too. Same thing in the wine, so don't get tripped out over the numbers.
Yeah.
Try it.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is don't worry about the number. If it's well made,
yeah,
you know, you can try, you know, Mosel or Schlesies, and they're beautiful and balanced, and they don't feel or taste sweet at all, but yet, yeah, they'll have, you know, very high levels of sugar.
Yeah, so don't get intimidated by that.
Yeah. So how would you describe the Riesling in terms of nose or palate? What now that we're smelling it? And by the way, I have to say, Allie, very aggressive pours. Very, very aggressive pours for tasting. I mean, you know, usually I do drink this amount of wine by 10:30 in the morning. So I appreciate it. If you were describing your Riesling, what would you be saying to the listener?
It's funny to smell and try it. I haven't had our Riesling in a bit, being 8 months pregnant, but it's been.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been.
Oh, I totally afraid. I can let Allie take over.
You're good. You're good. But it's really cool because I feel like every time I open a bottle of it, it changes to me in such an incredible way, and it's really come into its own.
Nice, warm, soft orange.
Yeah.
Is one of the things I'm getting on the mid palate. The joke I always make is I know my mom definitely drank when she was pregnant with me and my twin brother, because the Italian northern wine industry is still alive. And if my mom took 9 months away from drinking Pinot Grigio, that would have started an economic chain reaction that would have devastated millions of hectares of land. And I can make that joke because I know my mom is not listening to this podcast. So
yeah, I would say it's got some good, like, peach, stone fruit, good minerality. It's also getting that, I always love when Riesling has that good, like, wet, like, it sounds weird, but like that rain, like wet pavement, like minerality to it. I'm really getting that. It's smoothed out so much on the palate. Like, it's really refreshing. That bright acidity is great on a nice, like, hot day like today.
Yeah.
I'm definitely missing drinking this.
Yes. Well, you know what's funny about, like, that tasting note you give? We say it all the time, like, in the industry, and people are like, when people are not in it, they don't understand. But once you've tried it enough, you realize, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting. You know what I appreciate about your Sauvignon Blanc? It's actually not subtle. Now, it's not Marlboro, but I find a lot of people that make Sauvignon Blanc, and I understand it. They want to run away from Marlboro. Sometimes I want to run away from Marlboro when it's just, you know, when it's too much at you. But this one here is unapologetically a Sauvignon Blanc.
And that is what my dad has been wanting. So okay. It's funny. So not to get too deep into like history, but growers are paid for their grapes in a bunch of different ways, but a big thing is a sugar scale. So we would find that we'd walk through our, like, the Sauv Blanc vineyard, this vineyard specifically, and there was a point in time when you would taste it and it'd be like, oh my goodness, these flavors are absolutely incredible. We should, like, you want to pick it right now. But on the sugar aspect, it would maybe be a little bit lower. So whether it was the grower or the winery didn't really want to pick it because they're just like, the sugar's not there, or something wasn't there, because they have their own parameters. But we'd always be like, my dad would be like, I want to make wine out of that right now. And it's the same thing with this Riesling. Like, we would say to us, like, I want to make wine out of this Riesling right now. And it kind of was a bit of a battle too with our winemaking team at Drink Club, because it was nerve-wracking to pick it so early with the sugars low, but we wanted to make something that was a little bit lower in alcohol. Like, not, it's not crazy low in alcohol, it's pretty normal. I think the Riesling is 11% and the Sauv Blanc's 12%. We just loved where it was at that moment when you're trying, like, the berries. So same thing with the Sauv Blanc. There was a moment we tried it, we're like, we need to pick these, and these are getting picked tomorrow morning. So we would send a crew in there to clean it up, and we picked at like 5:30 in the morning. My uncle was there at 5 and he messaged me and said, where are you? And I'm like, give me a second, it's very early. But the reason for that was because we wanted to keep everything very cold.
Yeah.
Cold to concentrate those flavors and really capture all those aromatics.
And they're there.
Yeah. So we delivered the grapes very, very cold. And we kept it as cool as we could during fermentation that would allow it. And everything was stainless steel. And it was like, done fermentation, clean it up, close it, and let it be. Love her, let her be. And we just really wanted to showcase that vineyard, those aromatics. And my dad wanted to show that, like, we can do it here. We don't have to be shy about those Sauv Blanc aromatics. And we were really happy with how it came across.
And the interesting thing, I was recently trying Jeff from Divergence, his Sauvignon Blancs, very different. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you guys work together, you guys work really close. And what I love is just, I like differences, you know, because some people want more of one way, some people want more of another. But again, it represents how you can have all these different stylistic profiles within this area. When I'm tasting that now I'm tasting just your dad's passion.
Yeah.
Because that is for people that love Sauvignon Blanc, that love just the big fruit burst in the nose, in the palate. That one, that is all there. That's, that's well made.
Yeah, and it shows, and I think it shows the vineyard really nice, and it shows the year too. So when I talk about it being like a very, like, for aromatic whites, very fruit forward year, and the acids were a bit high, you can see that in there. Like, it's just very, like, the acids are higher, and that was that vintage.
And then final one we're going to try is the 4 Mile Creek 2022 Gamay. And that nose, I mean, just lovely black cherry spice, more of a red fruit leaning Gamay. It's funny. It just feels like more and more Ontario. It's. I don't know, almost like I'm going to try to demean it, but man, you can make so much good Gamay. And I mean, it obviously takes a ton of work to do it in the proper way. But when it's done right, you can find so much good Gamay in this area.
And I think, so this Gamay vineyard specifically has really come into its own. It's over 20 years old. Some really old vines there that are interplanted with some younger stuff. So I think that, like, variation is really nice in there. It's a great site. Very fertile soil. I will give a huge credit to my dad and my brother, who have really learned how to manage Gamay at that property. Gamay is the one, the more you look at it and the more you cut off it, the more fruit it wants to give you. So again, going for the same thing when it comes to wine and vine, it's balance. So we've really got these vines into balance and are able to produce delicious things like this. So I think we really wanted to focus on concentrated flavors, but we wanted to make a Gamay that looked like a Gamay. I wasn't trying to over oak it or do anything crazy to it to shy away from the fact that it's just very beautiful fruit. I really wanted to showcase the fruitiness of it, the smoothness of it. I didn't want it to be too powered by oak, but just enough to really balance out the mouthfeel. Mouthfeel is a huge thing for me in wine. I find I want to enjoy the whole experience of it, whether it's the first smell, aromatics, the burst of flavor that I get, and then the finish of it, the how I remember that wine.
What's the oak program for the Gamay?
So the Gamay is, we did one once filled barrel, and then the rest of them were more neutral barrels. So more just concentration effect than anything, and then a little bit of oak influence by a once filled barrel. All French oak, but neutral.
Right. Sometimes people compare Gamay a little bit with Pinot Noir. And I'm wondering, actually, I've never asked this, from just a pure farming and perspective, what's the difference in terms of Gamay versus Pinot Noir? Obviously, the heartbreak grape. Everyone always complains about it. And Kelly Mason swears at her grapes in the vineyard, which I find a delightful story. But just is Gamay... is it a little more user-friendly to make, or is it just same amount of a pain in the ass as Pinot?
So we actually personally don't own any Pinot farms, but we manage Pinot farms.
Yeah.
Pinot breaks down quite early. It's one of the ones where, like, you checked on it last night and it was good, and then this morning it's bad. So it's a hard one to navigate, like, timing it right to pick it. I find with Pinot... it's not one of the ones that you're thinning and it's going to give you more. That's Gamay. So Pinot really benefits from a lot of that, like, thinning and opening up the cluster and making sure that it's, like, to avoid it breaking down. Pinot's cool because you have, because that color variation when you look at it sometimes, that can be really fun. I would say it's light, like, it can be a bit lighter than Gamay, but it's picked earlier typically for sparkling and for table because it just breaks down faster. Gamay one, you don't have an issue with it breaking down. You can leave it hanging there. I would joke sometimes, like, we would be picking stuff and someone would message me like, oh, do you guys have any Pinot left? Like, well, if there's any Pinot left, she's stinky. Like, you don't want that Pinot that's left over,
right,
but still on the vine. Very different to grow.
Yeah.
And manage, especially during harvest.
All right. So we'll end with, actually, I was just thinking about this, and I appreciate you guys taking the time. What a lovely Gamay, and just good linger, not really nice finish on it. Are you excited about the idea somewhere down the road of... your kids next to you working on the rows, the grapes, the tractors, the everything, just the same way that you grew up with your father?
Yeah, we already bring out...
Hold on, Allie, jump on.
We already bring out our kids to the vineyard to see what's going on and even to experience firsthand. We were doing sugar testing at the Lingard Vineyard for our Riesling in probably September, and I had my little 3-year-old with me, yeah, and she helped Jess. She was stomping on the grapes to get the juice, and she, like, poured a little bit on the refractometer. She looked through it to see, and she didn't know what she was doing, but she had so much fun. And
yeah
it's so exciting when, especially, like, I live in the city and my two girls are, like, city girls, so bringing them here to, like, Opus Farm, they are so excited to just, like, run around and pick berries and try them. And it's really a blessing and a privilege to give our kids this gift, the gift that our dad gave to us.
That's so cool. You know, if then that can get passed down at a young age, they learn it, they get the passion for it. I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to push it in, but, you know, if they learn it, they love it, and they'll probably come back in some capacity. And then maybe future wine labels will have things with you, with your kids on it.
Yeah, and I think it's also too showing them, like, I know it's wine, it's not necessarily something that they're maybe going to enjoy for a little bit, but it's showing too, like, where food comes from and really connecting them with where we're from. Like, we live, like, Niagara region and even, like, Ontario. Like, we're a huge farming community, and just making sure our kids know that, like, where it comes from, where your food comes from,
right,
like, appreciating the land. I think that's another reason why we do it and want to bring them out here and show them, like, the value of farming, whether or not they want to be part of it. The hope is they do, because we work really hard.
Hell yeah. Well, yeah, it is farming. And I tell every time, a ball of wine, that's farming. There's 100 different hands and expertise in so many different areas of life that went into that bottle. I also realized, you guys, when your kids become teenagers, I hate to tell you this, your house is going to be the cool house where the other people come when they want to try booze. And it'll be better, because when I was 15, it was going through the parents', you know, liquor cabinet, and you put vodka, rum, and scotch with, like, grape crush. At least with you guys, your kids, if they sneak one, it's going to be with, like, high quality Sauvignon Blanc or Gamay.
Yeah, we might get pissed off with them if they took a bottle we were saving.
Oh yeah, that's true.
It's funny you mentioned that. I remember, like, which makes sense now, like, my best friend now, whenever I would go to her house, my dad would give me a bottle of wine to give to them. And I was embarrassed as a kid. I would show up to my friend's house and be like, here you go, my dad wanted me to bring you wine. And their parents would, like, be so happy. And
of course.
They would love when Jessica would come over. And now I kind of make sense. I'm like, as I'm an adult, I'm like, oh, I see why. I'm like, no, because I'd get so annoyed. I'm like, Dad, I don't need to keep bringing them wine. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, yes, I do.
And you realize you'll be doing that with your children.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
You'll be doing the oath. So now with your kids, like, listen, I don't want you to drink, but if you are, don't drive. You got to do it from home. And whatever you do, not the single vineyard stuff. Keep, if it's going to be the entry level, we can talk, but not the single vineyard. All right, we'll end with this. What, Ali, I'm going to start with you. So we're going to have to give the mic back. What, 5 years from now, where would you like to see Liebling Wines be in terms of quality, the same varietals, where you'd like to see it throughout Canada? Just thoughts on the 5 years from now.
Would love to have a little shop to be able to connect with people. I don't want to say daily if it's just my sister and I, but like the weekends, it would be great to just connect with people and have them taste and experience. Having a virtual winery is tough, so would love to have that face-to-face connection. Plan is still really to have these four wines, the Riesling, Sauv Blanc, Gamay, and Cab Franc. Maybe on off years, we'd do something fun, not like off bad years, but a one-off, I should say. But yeah, so 5 years down the road, Jess and I are still doing this. Our niece will be probably legal age, so she can be working with us. yeah, so that's the plan.
That's so cool. Thank you so much, Ali. And thank you again for the aggressive pours of your delicious wines.
I would say the same thing. I think we have a lot of, which is just what I love working with my family and working with my sister, a lot of things we would love to do and goals that we want to reach. And I think the biggest one would be the 5 years to have just something small and cute where we can bring people in and do what we're even doing right now. It doesn't have to be in an office trailer trying our wine, but we would love to be able to have a small space where we could sit down and talk like we're talking today, and hopefully have it be on one of our family farms so we can share the growing aspect of why we love to make wine and sit down and enjoy bottles with people.
I love it. I love it because my family on my mom's side, my grandfather in the 30s started a brokerage firm. It was like the oldest independent brokerage firm in Canada. And my twin brother, my old brother, my, you know, my mom, my uncles, like so many of my family, I never did. And I always loved it. It was a sense of pride. Like, okay, that's our family. And I could go into the office and see four or five different relatives. And that's so cool just seeing it with you guys. You're doing it. Your love for your father. And now hopefully eventually your kids, you know, will come in some capacity, who knows and what. So I'm gonna be rooting for you guys. I love it because it's very like, this is new. The other side, the Hugo side, I mean, that's big and impressive and has been very successful. And but I'm gonna be rooting also for the Liebling Wines as well. Where can people find it? Websites, or they want to find your wines, where would they go?
So they can go to our website, which will take them to drinkcollab.ca, where they can order our wines online, and which is very convenient, get it shipped directly to your house. But you can also stop by Mary Nissen and grab wine there. And then if you're on our Liebling Wines website, you could also get attached to our newsletter where we keep tabs on other events that we're going to be at. So different farmers markets. There's going to be an event in the summer at hopefully our main farm to try our wine. And we want to do a few little connection events. So our newsletter, our website, and social media.
Liebling Wines.
Ali's clearly the communications person
Liebling
in this.
Wine. Okay, hold on. Let's do this again because I want to give full promo. LieblingWines.ca. Yep. Now are you on Instagram or
we're,
on Facebook?
We're on Instagram and Facebook.
Instagram and Facebook,
at
yep.
Liebling Wines.
At Liebling Wines. And again, the place to go to visit Mary, what's it called again? What's the address? Mary Nissen.
Concession 1. That's
it's on Concession. I'm saying it because the mic is all over the place. It's going to be hard for audio. It's on Concession 1.
I don't know the exact address, but they do have all the wines. They have all the wines there as well to pick up. So, and then we sometimes will host events there with the Drink Collab crew where you can try all the like impressive wines that are coming from everyone there.
Anyone can find it. Just get on Google. It's in Niagara on the Lake. It's easy. I found it and I'm an absolute dummy. Ali, Jessica, thank you guys so much for this. This has been great. And just a really cool family story with some tasty wines to boot. Not a bad way to start my day. Thanks for everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.